This is GamesAtWork.biz with your hosts, Michael Martin and Michael Rowe. This is episode 18, Don't Kill Your Pigs.
Hello, and welcome to yet another edition of GamesAtWork.biz. This is Michael Martin. I'm coming to you from my home office here in Budapest, Hungary, and very excited for the show we're about to have with my co-hosts, starting with Michael Rowe.
Hey, Michael, thank you very much. And I really can't wait for your furniture to arrive so that we can cut down a little bit of the echo. But so glad that you're safe and sound in your new home. And really excited to announce our new co-host, Phaedra.
Yes.
Phaedra, welcome.
Thank you, Michael and Michael. Very pleased to be here.
So you've been up to some really cool stuff lately. Why don't you tell our listeners about it, and we'll dive right into the show.
Well, guys, last week I was at the Serious Play conference out in Seattle.
Seriously?
And yes, it was phenomenal. This was a conference that is being spearheaded by Clark Aldrich. It was being held at DigiPen, of course, the school that focuses specifically on new media and gaming. And they had just an incredible lineup of speakers. And it was interesting. Speaking there was kind of like being a preacher at a conference for Baptist preachers.
Amen, sister.
it was one of those experiences where you get up and everybody's nodding and nodding. There's no pushback amongst that group. But just some phenomenal people in that room. I really enjoyed the presentations that I heard. Clark Aldrich has been doing some really great work thinking hard about how to get serious games formally introduced to public schools, the public school system. He actually came out with a new short book, which is available online, that talks specifically about how you would use homeschoolers as a means to test bed a platform. And he's got some really cool ideas. I also spoke to the Serious Games director at the Center for Disease Control. Who knew that they had a Serious Games director? I certainly did not.
Well, you know, given the game Plague, which I've been playing lately, there's some serious sickness in disease. Never mind.
Well, it turns out, I had certainly heard of the zombie apocalypse PR campaign that came out of the CDC, but I did not know of all the games that have come out of there, too. I mean, a really inventive group there. And I was told by him, as well as others there, that the White House has now created a task force that meets on a monthly basis across government agency to talk about serious games.
Okay.
And this director for the CDC was part of this task force, as are a whole bunch of other people. So super, super cool. I mean, really heartening to see how things have been growing there. I had some great lunches with Ross Smith, who's leading up the Serious Games charge at Microsoft. And he's got some super cool ideas in terms of how to use games to boost productivity there. I met with a group from NATO who's focusing specifically on using serious games for training, and he gave a presentation. I mean, all in all, it was just an incredible learning experience. I highly recommend that conference. If any of you who's listening have a chance to go out to Serious Play out in Seattle, I think they're planning on having it every August out there at DigiPen. Well worth the trip.
And Phaedra, do they have a website or a link that talks about what they've done that we can throw in the show notes for everybody?
Yeah, sure. I'll send that your way. It's just Google Serious Play Conference and it'll come up.
Excellent. Well, it sounds like a lot of people are taking this seriously.
True.
And that there's some really cool stuff going on there. And speaking of serious and play, we've actually are working on yet another interview coming up around the idea of play. So we'll tease that one out there real quick, and we'll tell you a lot more about that coming up in the next week or so. So we've also gotten a listener tag, unless, Michael, do you have anything about Phaedra's event recently? Because that was pretty cool.
The only thing I would have liked to know is what was your topic that you got to be the Baptist preacher in a convention of Baptist preachers on?
Well, I spoke about using serious games to go beyond skills training. So using them to collectively solve complex problems. So it was a lot of fun. People are really getting jazzed about this topic.
Cool. Very cool. I love it.
I bet you were awesome. Is that presentation maybe out on Vimeo, or did they record stuff and make it available to people? That would rock.
They did. They recorded it. The presentation is going to be made available online through the Serious Play Conference.
And we should put a link to that video in our show notes too. Excellent. Excellent. That's exciting. That's exciting. So one of the tweets that we got in the last week from one of our listeners is about the six reasons why gamification, and we all hate that word, will rule the business world. So
I only mildly dislike it.
Don't worry, if you play with it enough, you'll hate it. If you play with it enough, you will hate it. I wanted to get you guys' thoughts on this. I know my first reaction when I saw the title was, why did they use that term? But when you start looking at it, it actually is a pretty good detail on some of the reasons and some of the activities that are driving gamification. And one that I actually have no interest in whatsoever, I got to start with it, is number six. And I don't know if either of you play fantasy leagues like fantasy football, but I was actually in a meeting last Thursday, I believe it was, and one of the people in the meeting goes, we need to hurry up and finish this meeting because I have to go to the draft for my fantasy football league.
Yeah, I saw one of my Twitter friends tweeting about this earlier today too. I believe it was Macker, and he said, hey, I'm number 12 in a 12-person league for drafting teams. Any strategy tips?
Give up now. Well, or you can think of it as a positive. There's no way you could be worse.
Well, yeah, but then you wouldn't have to worry about rushing to your draft party then.
Exactly, exactly. So I know, just going back, gosh, how many years was this? Michael, you and I used to play small ball.
Yeah.
Which was, in a way, kind of a fantasy baseball league, even though reality, right?
But yeah, but it wasn't. I mean, I don't have the patience for fantasy leagues. You get too wrapped into all of them, and there's too much management going on. Small ball was fun, and I like playing that.
Ball, you actually trained your team and built up skills, et cetera. Fantasy leagues, you're really, I like statistics and mathematics. And I guess from that perspective, fantasy leagues would be great because that's all it is, right? I mean, you're not actually doing anything other than picking the players to be able to impact the results.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm with you because you're using actual data and it becomes much more business analytic and predictive and so on and so forth. But like I said, I don't have the patience for the amount of energy the management of a fantasy team would take because some of those get ultra super involved. And I don't even do that on platform games or console games. I'll play football or hockey or other things on those console games, but I will not go into like coach mode and do the trading of the players and run the whole seasons and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's more of a dip in, dip out, have fun.
Yeah, that's where I land.
Well, that's the interesting thing because if we look at number four or number five about money isn't everything and boredom, right? If you think about gaming activities, it's really about driving that fun, get rid of the boredom, and do things that provide, more of an intuitive value whether that's a learning value or I hate to use this term, but I'll call it a feel-good value that make you better equate to the activity or the task that's at hand, instead of just worrying about, you know, if I game this process, it'll be cheaper.
Maybe. I mean, you know, what struck me from this particular article, and I don't know if it did you too, Michael, but the much of this is the same, you know, yesterday's dinner served up kind of quasi fresh here for lunch. You know, it's we've seen all these before. We recognize their capabilities, but what we're trying to get to is that next great leap, the real big transition, you know, the Farmville notion. How do you apply that in a way that makes enough of a business impact over and above, you know, what the obvious might be, but hasn't happened yet either?
I agree that a lot of it is, you know, yesterday's lunch being served up as tonight's dinner, or reverse that. Right, leftovers. But the interesting thing that I found out is where the article was. Right, it was in Time Magazine. That's, you know, really kind of mainstream traditional media tend to be behind the curve a bit on ideas. And, you know, either they have somebody who really listened and can regurgitate yesterday's lunch. God, this is an awful metaphor.
Yeah, let's not go there. But wasn't it Time Magazine that had what was her name? Ansi Cheng, the person who had made like $1 million
her
or something.
Second Life millionaire.
Yeah. That was a cover of Time, wasn't it?
Was it Time? So what you're telling me is they're good at catching the beginning of the hype curve?
I don't know. I'm wondering if we should take this as an interesting warning. I don't know. So
Phaedra, what do you think? Where's the hype curve on gamification?
Well, there were some great conversations about this at the Serious Play conference itself. And I've got to say, there was a line down the room between the preachers who were there. So, you know, half of them were really saying, you know, as many others do, that there's so many bad examples of gamification that really there's going to be a trough of disillusionment associated with anything with the word game in it. And that's why people are nervous about the term. But I would say for the most part, there was a lot of optimism in the room that people are going to learn how to do this well, because those that do this well will be really taking advantage of the return on the initial investment, whether that's, you know, user loyalty or brand name recognition, you know, whatever the case might be. And there were some good tips at the conference showing examples of organizations that have done it right and, you know, what are the right kinds of methodology. So it seems like, you know, lessons learned are being shared. So hopefully this means we're going to see better and better representations.
That's fair. And that's one of the great things about the hype curve, right? You know, mm-hmm. There is a trough of disillusionment. And the question is, how long do you stay down there?
Mm-hmm.
And with the examples of some of the really cool things that are going on, hopefully those will overshadow the, you know, I added badges to my check-in at the car, you know, at the rental car at the airport, right?
Right.
You know, where everything's badged, and so therefore, well, we've gamified that because we put badges on it.
Yeah, well, and it's also very similar to what Ian Bogus was saying on the show with us last week, too. It's not just, you know, who's using games or how many people are playing games. It's to what end and what purpose. So, great that we're getting some user tweets on this as well, and it was neat to read the Time article in, you know, taken in that light too.
That's why we tossed it out there. So, you know, we are looking for more people to, you know, provide us ideas, content, things you want to hear us talking about. So, you know, sometimes yesterday's lunch is just fine. Even if we're just going to badmouth the tweet that you sent us, right? You know,
Oh, come on. You know, this is the thing. So, you know, Pedro, let me ask you this question. You said, you know, it was like a preacher's convention. Were there any interesting dissenting opinions that you heard while you were there? Was there anyone who took a contrarian point of view that really kind of got people to think?
Not especially, no. No, I mean, I had a good conversation, you know, on the sidelines with some of the folks there where, you know, we had some good conversations that were rather contrarian, but nothing like no presentation where everyone was like, that's absolutely wrong. I just didn't get that sense. I remember there was a presentation by a professor at the Rochester Institute of Technology where he was talking about assessments. You know, everybody's talking about what is the ROI of serious games, blah, blah, blah. And he was saying, we got to really watch out for the assessment trap. How do you assess whether a game has actually met its goals? He said, you know, if we use the same old assessments that we were using, for example, with standardized testing or with the traditional means, then aren't we still falling into the same trap in terms of whether we're recognizing that serious games help to have people think differently? So I thought that was really good. That certainly opened up some apertures for me, but there was nothing per se that I recall where people were really, you know, dissenting.
Pedro, that's mm-hmm. that's a really good point. And just to take the, you know, the opposite view, though, is then how do you measure, right?
That's what I asked him. And his response was, we're not there yet. We don't know. But it was interesting when he was giving examples of what this means. He was saying, for example, with some of the first-person shooter games, people would beat the game by thinking completely out of the box in ways that the game designers had not conceived of. For example, they would point their rocket launcher towards their feet so that they could jump over massive walls. You see, they'd point it at their feet, have it go off, which would propel them up. And he says, you know, how that's an example of how people think out of the box in the entertainment world. So how do you assess when people think out of the box using serious games in a non-entertainment space?
That's a really good example because, you know, one of the things that you're trying to drive, at least from my perspective, when it comes to using serious games and using gaming for activities, is that low impact for failure. So yeah. In real life, you probably would never stand next to a wall and go, you know, if I shot this rocket launcher at my feet, you know. But you do it in a game because you're able to test out and experiment with the physics or the rules of that space to understand how you can better achieve the desired outcome. And it's, you know, it goes back to the old Star Trek example of, you know, Captain Kirk cheating in the no-win situation so he could win.
Yeah, it was interesting. I had a conversation with my 8-year-old in the car the other day, and we were talking about math. And she says, so if I just memorize, you know, my multiplication tables, does that mean that I really understand math? And it just got me thinking, like, okay, so what assessment tools do we have today to really gauge whether people creatively understand math, like can picture it in their head? You know, I mean, it's that sort of thing. Like, I don't think we're there yet with our assessment and how to do this in the right way. Well, he didn't think so either. I think we've still got a ways to evolve.
The math example is a great one if you think about it, because one of the things that you learn in mathematics, right, is there are certain fundamental rules that you just have to learn by rote. And
yeah.
Having that grounding in the basic mechanics of the theory allow you then to step up into things like, you know, Boolean algebra or derivatives and other very complex mathematical concepts that you can then start thinking about the innovative ways or the outside of the box thinking that if you don't understand the structure and the rules of the domain, you never get to those other things. So
that's true.
Well, I think that's a great question with your 8-year-old.
It is, and I think there's another answer there too that's worth exploring as well. And that while certainly you can't do higher levels of math without understanding basic math facts at lower levels of math, there does come a point where having the ability to calculate rapidly is not the same as being able to understand and model a complex problem and create a solution for it. So an assessment, in my mind, might be much better suited to saying, here's a complex problem, right? You know, how many gallons of milk could you put in this room and contain it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and figure out what that would be, and then let the calculation speed of a computer or a phone or whatever do the crunching of the numbers, but come up with creative mechanisms for solving the problem. And that's an assessment that really means something and demonstrates understanding.
I think that's an excellent point. I concur. Because the creativity comes in terms of how you're going to approach the problem and not necessarily in the minutia, which an Excel spreadsheet can, you know, crank out.
Yeah, but there's something to be said, though, for, you know, there are some people who come up with the creative answer, but they never implement it. Right. Mm. And I remember reading, I can't remember his article, whatever, about this one guy. He was such a genius, but as soon as he figured out how to solve the problem, it was done. Right. And then doesn't actually move on to actually solving the problem.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So how do you, you know, I think one of the great things about serious games and gaming in general is just because you think you can solve the problem. And, you know, I find this with like Angry Birds, another good example, since everybody plays Angry Birds now. I know how I'm going to solve this puzzle. But unless you actually solve it, you don't kill your pigs.
Speaking of Angry Birds, you just reminded me of another talk I heard while I was there. This was a talk by a blogger who was saying, why aren't we taking more entertainment title games and creating templates for teachers that reside on top of them? For example, he showed Angry Birds and he said, why couldn't you teach vector theory?
Oh, awesome.
With Angry Birds, like you can actually show, you know, you do the measurements on the screen before you shoot off the cannon. Like, why couldn't teachers use that as a means to teach already games that they're already playing versus creating new serious games?
Yeah, Angry Birds is a great example because, you know, they're actually doing some engagement now with their Angry Birds in Space, right? Kind of the NASA mm-hmm. stuff where they've changed the physics based off of, you know, some of the physics in space. But they haven't done exactly what you're describing of taking advantage of the learning moment there to extend it to a specific educational domain. It's more of a cool factor. And I really like the idea of that extension to an actual practical domain.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, he brought up Civilization and some other great titles too. But I think it's interesting. I think he's going to be or is working on a book that cranks out a bunch of these templates. So I think it'll be interesting to see what he comes up with.
Excellent, excellent. So I know we're right at time right now. Phaedra, welcome officially to the show as a co-host. We're so excited to have you here.
Thank you. I'm happy to be a part of it. This is always fun.
Excellent. And Michael, glad to see things are, I won't say quite settling down yet, but
they're not.
It's starting to have a life.
It's going to be a while.
And we're really excited to keep hearing feedback from our listeners. So don't forget to follow us on Twitter at games@work_biz or any of our co-hosts. We are all on Twitter and that information's on the website. I am MichaelRowe01. Michael?
And I am Carolina Big Blue.
Phaedra?
And I am Innovate Game, and that's with the number 8.
Excellent. And we'll talk to y'all soon, and can't wait for our next exciting interview, which is coming up soon. Bye.
See ya.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and you can follow us at Twitter at GamesAtWork_BIZ. We'd like to thank the guys at Zebes Systems for their rocking version of the Moon Patrol game theme.